Tumbeta italia katika anga.
Like this. That is how the trumpet will sound.
The World Health Organization, I was actually waiting to hear if they'll release a statement to see how they're going to justify supporting it. It's not yet out. Maybe it might come.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, remember, it all boils down to money and stuff like that. So saliva is one. So ukikiss mtu akona Ebola, you can get Ebola. But it's not ile ambayo
ukapapa
kwa mkono to protect themselves.
Mm.
The PPE that they brought was substandard. Guys started catching COVID. Doctors started dying left, right, and center.
Mm.
ICU zote zimejaa. Then there was also the other thing COVID taught us was at that time when it started, insurance was not covering. Not your private insurance, not NHIF.
Mm.
So now Ebola ikikamu na iletwe na ikuje and it spreads, mm, infect a Kenyan person. Is SHA going to cover it? We still don't know.
Mm. You tell me I have it. Oh, but sasa nataka sasa, nataka kukimbia because I don't want to be
stigma, yeah.
Nataka kukimbia. So how are you guys going to handle it, because it borderlines like what you call it, like msiana fa kuarestiwa sasa, like because we know you have it, you can infect other people, but pia Ikonene. What episode is this again?
Episode 674. Yeah.
And as you can see, tuko na mtu kwa kiti.
Yeah.
He doesn't need any more introduction. Nikamna mjua, he's part of the couch now.
Yeah.
He's been here too many times.
Yeah, been here a number of times.
Yeah, so at least wale wa mjui, and introduce.
Yeah. The guys who don't know me, you guys are getting so many new subscribers.
Yeah.
I'm also realizing there's a lot of young guys and I'm getting older, so people can't assume.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man, my name is Dr. Rain. Officially, I'm Dr. Ngala Mwendwa.
Mm.
I am a board certified consultant pediatrician in Kenya, meaning I hold a master's of medicine in pediatrics,
mm-hmm,
and also I also hold a master of medicine degree in child health, so more of public health, child health, immunization, vaccination. So very, very conversant with, you know, things like diseases, viruses, vaccination, immunization, outbreak, because part of the training was being involved with public health, like surveillance, disease surveillance, and all the surveillance that is done.
Mm.
Like, I'm pretty sure you guys don't know, like, most of these rivers here, South B, South C, they do every 2 weeks, if they haven't increased, they, Nairobi rivers, they usually get the water and check for poliovirus.
Mm.
So that's just some of the surveillance that goes on without you guys knowing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And for other things, they surveil a lot of things like malaria, the way those mosquitoes are breed, where they mostly go. Mm. So there's a lot of work being done in the public health space. And
now you're going to notice one thing, right? That couch over there is going to be on your case, because these are the people with kids. Okay. Me, I'm still roaming around this bitch. So these people here, want to kusikiliza. Watakusikiza vizuri.
No, it's
toys, but also child health, but in the sense of public health.
Public health,
Of course, with an emphasis more on children, but public health is public health.
Yeah.
It's understanding, and then it's the same thing, understanding like health systems, the different pillars to strengthen health systems.
Yeah.
So that's what I studied and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm also a digital health advocate. Of course, I'm an artist.
We see you.
I'm a father, a husband.
Yeah.
I'm in the capacity of a pediatrician, and just to give my expert opinion on some health matters you guys wanted to discuss today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for stopping by.
Mm.
I think I came across your video in Kasema. Like, I called Zach.
Mm.
Zama,
ile Zach, Ebola, ile bat pale.
Ile ama fruit bat.
Mezunguka kidogo.
Yes, and I think we can start from there.
Okay.
That's an issue affecting public health.
Yeah.
Are we safe?
With Ebola?
Yes.
If I say we're safe, I'd be lying to you guys.
Mm.
But at the same time, I don't want to to create some fear mongering or panic.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that given, you see, the thing is, surveillance, continuous surveillance of diseases, especially like things like Ebola, is very, very important. And this Ebola outbreak was declared on May 16th. But the contact tracing and going back to cases
mm-hmm.
that were similar to the signs of Ebola are tracing back all the way to early as February. So it's something that started before. And then the challenge is, if you remember COVID, you remember that contact tracing.
Like mm-hmm.
you had to go and find out who you've come in contact with, and who has that person come in contact with, so that you're able to pinpoint the area. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the scary part is that this thing might have started way before it was actually declared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where surveillance is very important. And when I say surveillance, it's basically, let's just look at it like the CCTV camera of capturing viruses, diseases,
mm.
Through different mechanisms in the public health space.
Yeah.
They did a lot of that in the Congo, but unfortunately, once Trump was elected, you remember he pulled out of USAID,
mm-hmm.
which used to fund a lot of centers and support with surveillance of diseases. You know, it supported us with HIV treatment. So that was pulled out. A lot of people lost their jobs. Some of the staff were American and they were working there. And those are the guys who now used to pick mm-hmm. it mapema, like, oh, we've gotten a case of Ebola. Because, mind you, this is the 17th outbreak of Ebola in the DRC. And last year, actually, in December, Ebola was declared there's no outbreak. Because Ebola is the type of disease, if they just get upatetu one case, you declare an outbreak. It's not like those ones where you wait until there's a cluster of people and then things are getting out of hand and you say, okay, now we have an influenza outbreak.
Mm.
It's one case, bus, and then it starts. So they declared Ebola, DRC Ebola free, and it was a big celebration. That was last year in December.
Mm.
And for you to declare an Ebola outbreak free, what it means is that you don't record any confirmed cases with the testing, the PCR testing, in 42 days. So if from day zero to day 42, if we've not had a single confirmed case, we declare the outbreak over.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes 20 days and then kuna mtu amepata, unaanza tena. So in December, they declared it.
Mm-hmm.
But now, unaona, like barely, if like Feb, we are suspecting it started in Feb and not May.
Yeah.
Unaona, it's barely even like 2 months.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's that reason of pulling out. And then the reasoning, and if you watch that video, is that's what I go into, because I realized
maybe you can explain for those guys when you're Jew, like, how does it just start?
And yeah, why, so and why the come? DRC, the challenge with the DRC is the mining that is happening for minerals in the DRC, the conflict created and caused because of the mining and the minerals and the resources that people are trying to control, and the displacement that it has caused as a process. So the mines, there's a lot of deforestation. So you start cutting down trees, you get closer and closer inside the bush where you have access to these animals, because Ebola is a zoonotic disease, meaning that it's primarily in animals, but it's possible for it to be transmitted from an animal now to a human being.
Mm.
And specifically with the fluids like blood. So unaona sasa vile sisi unachinja kuku, unachinja mbuzi. So you go there, you chinja those monkeys. People eat monkeys, chinja, porcupines,
chimpanzees,
or bats. And I was listening to a former CDC, USAID doctor who was working with Ebola. So some of these mines, you see, they go underground and they're illegal mines.
Mm.
They don't have any toilets down there. And then because you're digging under, it kind of creates the environment for like a cave. Mm. So that's where the bats go.
Mm.
So he was just talking about how it's very unsanitary. There's no bathroom. So they can spend days looking for minerals.
Mm.
So there's shit there. They piss there.
Yeah.
And then now the bats are also there. So the bats shit. Nini, nini.
Yeah.
You're staying there for days. Mm. Auna food or whatever. So utashika bat, we cut it, you start your kafaya there and you eat as you look for your minerals. Mm. So that's another point of how people come to get it, get the Ebola from now the mining and also now because of the mining and the deforestation going deeper in the bush. Because hata huko, Congo is like the most, I think it is the most rich country because they it's rich that. In minerals.
Yeah, they say like it's richer than like all the countries around it combined, like even in Europe.
No, even most of
the world. Even basically the
only, agriculture, you see, like farming.
Yeah.
Mm. So now what happened is minerals became the thing.
Yeah.
Mm. So guys are not farming, guys are not.
They're just going to look for.
Guys are going to look for minerals.
For minerals.
You know, get rich quick.
Mm. Quick, yeah. But it's also, almost like a shortcut. Yeah?
Yes. Mm. Shooting shortcut. It's also the. You know, situation
iko kwa ground.
Yeah,
of which it can be solved, by the way. Like, not really solved, but you can ease the burden. Like, all these companies that are mining all this, whatever they're getting from there, if they just decide, okay, instead of us getting the 150% profit, let's cut down and give them like a 30%, those guys will be happy because of what they've seen, not because it's what they are worth, but because of the shit they've seen, they're like, okay, we'd rather just get this and chill rather than go in the caves, look for these things, come back up here, look for medium rare monkey, shoma, and then catch a disease. You understand?
True. Mm. But yeah, that's also another thing. There's also a lot of myths around it. There's still, there's distrust. People don't trust the government.
Mm.
And another misconception I want to break is that, and also where maybe I am agreeing with a lot of theorists online, is that they're saying Ebola is manufactured.
Mm.
And to them, it's manufactured in a lab. To me, I agree with them that it's manufactured.
Mm.
Manufactured in the sense that we have allowed, or African countries have allowed, we as Africans have allowed, and then the West's influence, that thing of the minerals,
getting
all these minerals that are supposed to be for green energy, your cobalt, your lithium, all that stuff that is supposed to make batteries for grid power and not fossil fuels, all of that is creating or manufacturing a situation for Ebola to thrive, you know, for the outbreaks to increase. So not manufactured in a lab, but manufactured in a geopolitical manner due to capitalism and Africa's resources being taken.
Mm.
Our African leaders not standing up. And not uniting and saying, listen, you guys are not taking our resources.
Yeah.
We're going to be mining properly with proper shafts, employing people with benefits and terms like they're supposed to, training them, creating your own, you know, processing so that we value add.
Yeah.
We know the solutions that need to be happened. You know, that's the thing. It can't be happening 17 times.
Yeah.
And you guys claim to say, we wonder why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's manufactured in that sense, but not in the lab. That one is, the science is not supporting it. What we know is that it's the bushmeat, it's the consequences of displacement of 6.5 million Congolese people from the Democratic Republic of Congo. It is because of the deforestation, and it is because of the contact with bodily fluids.
The batments.
Mm.
Just a quick query, because you've mentioned how, you know, the whole entire ecosystem that comes and breeds Ebola, you know, looking at it from the different angles that we have. My question would be, you said that Africans can stand up and say, we're going to do this. But it only took USAID to leave Africa. And then, boom, Ebola is out.
Yeah.
Who came in to patch that gap? Because I don't believe Africans even, forget even about Congo, even the AU itself. Did they have any strategy to patch up where USAID left?
Even governments themselves, even Kenya. So even us, the HIV program has really been hit hard because USAID used to do that. So basically what you're defining is absolutely right, is our over-reliance on aid as African countries.
Mm.
And you can see how the West are using that also as to strong arm. Kenya signed the US deal. There are countries like Ghana who declined to sign it. I think Uganda also refused to sign it. Zimbabwe as well. Zambia. No, I think, I'm not sure if that one you have to fact check. But a couple of African countries were given this US deal. And we created a lot of noise about it because of data protection, because they needed a lot of, the US had access to our health data as Kenyan citizens. So now they use it of, if you don't sign this deal, we are pulling out the aid that we're giving you. And they know that the aid they're giving us is like HIV, ARV medication. So if we remove it, your people are going to die. Mm. So they use it to strong arm. So aid is something that they also use to weaponize and to be able to serve their interests as opposed to our interests as Africans. The biggest challenge we have as Africans is we have all these resources, but most of the countries are in debt. There's IMF, there's World Bank. As you know, Kenya's biggest problem now is we can't even invest in proper healthcare, proper education, because all the money is going to pay debt. It's either, and most of it is foreign debt. And that's why things, there's always a new finance bill, because the IMF, the WHO have to also impose where they're going to get their money back. And that is, you're going to increase tax here. Your fuel taxes here are going to go up. So you're absolutely right. Did people factor it in? No, because Africans, again, they're so used to, we don't even need to allocate money for this particular thing because we get this money from foreign people.
Mm.
And it's very recent, as of today, in today's 5th of June, the Treasury has said they're going to allocate now money, 700 million, I think, into preparedness preparedness, emergency response preparedness, in case now we start spilling. Because if it's already in Uganda, it's only a matter of time, that this thing could actually cross over.
Mm.
But just to answer your question, I think in a long form. hatuna do.
Hatuna do.
Eh.
But wanna quickly join that, because you've mentioned that it's Uganda, na very soon, sooner rather than later, itaingia Kenya.
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping
we are praying. We are praying.
Yeah, I'm hoping this available. But it's unaona. It's Uganda is just next door.
Yes,
and it's the same thing. The Ituri province is just at the border of Uganda. So especially now, Busia, that area, like even those areas where we are close, chances are,
because also the borders there are porous. Apart
very,
from where the trucks are going through, yes. Zingine ni,
exactly.
People are relatives, people are one family, one issue with another and living on the other side. But my question will be, in light of the recent developments in Nanyuki, Ebola is in Uganda, but here we have a space that is under construction, a center, whereby Ebola victims will be brought in, voluntarily brought in and treated there. With the risk, we all know Ebola, with the risk that somebody might be contaminated, one of the people who are close to the patients, and then it goes out. Was that a wise decision?
Or even before, we can answer those, but is the medical team, also in Kenya, well-equipped or well-trained to handle Ebola?
Okay. So I'll just combine it all and then
yes.
with that. So I'll start with the last question. Is it wise? Absolutely not. From a scientific point of view, from an infectious disease point of view, in terms to contain outbreak, it doesn't make any sense for somebody, you have no recorded cases in your country, to bring somebody who is already infected or suspected to have, because there's usually suspected case and then there's confirmed case. Mm. The confirmed case is through testing. If you remember during the COVID time, you used to hear PCR. Mm. So they do that polymerase chain reaction. It's for DNA. So it's very specific. So that's when you get a confirmed case. But then you have the criteria for a suspected case. Yeah.
Mm.
Usually those things would happen. Most of the symptoms are very similar to malaria. And that's why it's a bit scary. And training is very important, because it's like they'll talk about fever, history of contact with a person who has Ebola, and coming from an area that there is a confirmed case of Ebola. So they go over through that and then they say, okay, this is a suspected case. So that's why you leave a notice, like when they're giving you data, they'll say confirmed cases this amount, suspected cases this amount. Because it's taking time to do those tests, juizo zinaweza kufanywa only in specific labs. And in the DRC, there are not many. I think there's only like 3 or 4 labs that can do the PCR testing.
Mm.
And the other reason also they were trying to justify about it here, having that center, is because we can do it here at Cambry. Cambry is a very, very high-end lab right now. It's it's doing an amazing, amazing job in terms of, because they can do further, they can do genome sequencing. Because this Ebola virus is the Bundibugyo virus. So there's three, three types we know of.
Mm.
There's the Zaire strain or the Zaire virus. That's the one that caused a lot of deaths, 2,000 deaths at some point. But it's also the one that they've done the most research on. It actually has, there's a vaccine for that. So vaccination and is also the reason why they ended up declaring Ebola free, because the vaccines were created. And then they also created like testing kits, what we call rapid diagnostic testing kits, so that you don't rely on those PCR things. So example of a rapid diagnostic test is like the one for malaria,
mm-hmm.
like a blood spot for checking for malaria, or the one that they check for HIV now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's similar, but it's easy to do. So, and why they didn't detect that time, they were using the rapid test to test for Ebola, the Zaire variant, and they were testing negative, despite having symptoms of Ebola.
Mm.
So they're like, ah, eco negative. But later they came to realize it's the Bundibugyo strain, and those tests or those kits don't work for that. So they missed that. So why this one is a bit scary is because one, QI test is a bit hard. So you'll be dealing with a lot of suspected, and there'll be a backlog of getting confirmed tests so that you know in real time what is really going on. And then two is, we definitely, on top of saying that it doesn't make sense, the World Health Organization, I was actually waiting to hear if they'll release a statement to see how they're going to justify supporting it. It's not yet out. Maybe it might come,
mm-hmm.
because again, remember, it all boils down to money in terms of response. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was that US aid gap. And I think that is the rationale I'm seeing Gava took, is like USAID money was pulled out, but these guys are back and they're ready to drop this money.
Mm.
It will help us to with budget, to top off budget, so that we can improve and get more prepared.
Mm.
So they're looking at a way to whatever that gap, but not at the expense of bringing in Ebola from outside.
Mm.
That doesn't make any scientific sense. I don't care how people will.
Logical.
We've seen all the wakubwas go there, the PS, the CS of health, and said yes.
Mm.
Because remember, the way it came out from Mark Rubio, I think he's the foreign secretary.
Yes.
He said this place is exclusively for Americans.
Mm.
So that already is like what you call, you know, health inequity, health apartheid.
Mm.
Because you can't build a facility, guys are dying. Let's say, for example, there's Ebola in Kenya, and that facility is purely for Americans. So that's when the problem started. And then also, imagine hearing what's happening in your country from a foreign government. Now, the foreign government is telling you, the Ministry of Health, now nobody has told you, guys, by the way, there's this deal, we have just signed a health deal, and that this is going to help us prepare. It had to come out from that side.
Yeah.
But of course, later, so to give benefit of the doubt, the PS came out and said that it's not exclusively for Americans. Kenyans will also be treated there and things like that. However, fine. If we've killed that part of it's not racism, it's not American only.
Mm.
Still, if we don't have Ebola in the country, why bring it?
Yeah. Because his statement really, like, really irks me when he says we will not allow an Ebola case to be brought into the States.
Into
but
America,
the people who have it are not Kenyans, they're Americans. So first, for your own American government, it looks bad that you don't want to take care of your own people, because the best facilities to treat your people probably be in your country.
Mm.
But also, it doesn't make sense to get somebody who is affected in a place where he's affected and then move him to a place where, like, let's say, what work in fresh. Like, if you needed to build a center, it needed to be closer to where the source is, so that by the time there, maybe you what do you call it, stabilize them, then now you can say, okay, maybe we need another center nearby where there's more development. Let's say Kenya is more developed, blah, blah. So now for stabilization, once you realize, okay, so this person is going to make it, but they need more than what we have at the center.
And that's why you've seen there's been backlash from doctors.
Yeah.
You've seen the doctors' union also come out strong about it. Because of them, I think they came out the strongest.
Yeah.
But anyway, unions, you know, too, they have to come out strong. And then,
yeah, when the bug comes,
you have to agitate for the bug.
But as things stand, it is what it is.
So just to add on to now what he's saying, why it is dangerous now. Bring in Ebola here is because Ebola, the way it is spread, so a positive thing about Ebola, it doesn't spread as fast as COVID. If one person has Ebola, when you come into close contact, it can spread like maybe to two people. And that's very different. With COVID, it was like one person to 20.
Mm.
You can easily spread it, and it was like airborne. So Ebola is usually the bodily fluids, like blood, saliva, vomit, you know, pis, feces, and stuff like that. So saliva is one. So ukikiss mtu ako na Ebola, you can get Ebola, but it's not ile ambayo
ukapapo kwa mtu mko nayo.
You know, it's not like niko safe, like as long as hakuna exchange of bodily fluids. And then an interesting thing, I've also so now,
including,
remember there were some guys who, did you see the ones that some nurses had recovered, who had gotten Ebola? Some male nurses had recovered in DRC. They didn't, so it was good. It was like good news, like four or five guys. So now Ebola virus can stay in semen for up to 15 months. So when there's a recover,
but then you buzz enough.
But now if you mkenda mkakule hapo roo nyama nyama, magaya unashikwa na Ebola after. Weome u jamaa amepona, alikuwa nayo lakini
amepona.
It can spread.
Through spreading legs.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the thing. So make sure that if you know somebody who had Ebola, hata kama amepona.
Amepona.
Abstain. That,
it's either abstain 15 months, ama make sure adunge condom.
Hata mwafi yuko China nizatuletea condoms nilimuambia. But
in other words, msikule roho, ni mbaya.
Zaki, ambia kwanza Zaki. In the meantime, you've mentioned how the differences in transmission between Ebola and
COVID.
And COVID.
Yeah.
By the way, before I ask my question, I just want to commend all health workers who are working in that area.
Thank you, man.
Because it takes a lot of heart. It takes a lot of spirit. Yeah. And I know there are so many Kenyans who are working there. And we'll come to that because there was a time also there are so many Kenyan health workers who went to the aid of when the previous outbreak.
Yeah, in DRC.
In DRC. Before that, there's, you mentioned about the spread, how it spread. And you said COVID spreads much faster, you know. But what about mortality rate? Because I strongly believe...
That's a good question.
Yes. I strongly believe we have an issue...
Yeah.
Deep issue with Ebola more than COVID. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. That's a very good question because that's also very relevant. So the mortality rate for Ebola Zaire is around 50%. This meaning, in two people, one person dies. Yeah, because Ebola is a viral, they call it a viral hemorrhagic fever disease. So hemorrhagic basically means bleeding. So you can bleed internally, you'll vomit a lot of blood. So you become dehydrated. You lose fluids and then you also lose blood, which is also fluid. And then your body goes into shock. Your organs, your kidneys, everything fails and now you die. So that's basically how severe it is. This one is 30%. And then again, why it's also, they're still saying it's as much as it doesn't spread quickly, the mortality rate is faster. Because COVID, unless you had the chronic diseases, maybe you had high blood pressure, diabetes, you are very obese, you are the one at high risk. But this is what tulishukua na COVID na tukapona, most of us, we didn't, especially if we didn't have comorbids. Though pia COVID, the problem was the mortality rate was not high, but the infection, so it's more people were infected. So because it's not high, but more people die because of the numbers. So the volume is higher. Whereas Ebola, it's, spreads less, but if you catch it, the chances of you going is high. And this one is more scary because now haina vaccine. and there isn't. And for the Zaire version, by the way, there's also treatment. There's a particular treatment for it that is given. And it doesn't work for this Bundibujo virus. So we're dealing with one of those diseases as like the way COVID started, where it was supportive. We give you oxygen, we give you whatever support and hope your immune system.
You leave it to the immune system.
Yeah. So that's the thing now with Bundibujo. So higher mortality rate. So that's scary. Mm. And then remember I told you it's bodily fluids, including blood.
Mm.
So now wakileta watu, unajua in that facility, they are probably going to send the samples to Kemri. Mm. The samples have to move in some proper infection control mechanism, double packaging, nini, that requires a lot of commodities, a lot of resources.
Mm.
So preparedness in that sense that they need to provide that. Because now, as those samples keep going for testing those guys, and that person maybe has Ebola, along the way, if a healthcare worker doesn't have the right skills or doesn't control it the right way.
And also even the...
Unashikwanayo.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, once you know something is that crazy, no matter how well trained you are, you're going to feel nervous at some point.
And then to bring it back to what he said about healthcare workers and frontline workers, I want to remind people of the reason why we are saying we're talking about preparedness is because I remember even for me, the first time it went viral, I was talking about COVID. Doctors were dying because this thing infects, the people who get a lot is the healthcare workers.
Yes, of course.
Those are the guys who are dying sana. And so we were not prepared. I was like, I remember in times of COVID, easy N95 masks.
Mm.
Mm.
Before now, China blew up with mass production and then they became cheap. Those N95 masks were very expensive. Mm. Some of them were coming from Europe. Some of them were coming from the US. I remember that time we had to recycle our N95 masks for 3 weeks. Unaingia job, unajua patients wakona COVID, possibly wakona COVID. But unambia, when you go home, remove your mask, dry it in the sun. The sun will kill the viruses, then put it back on.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were doing very, very crazy stuff.
Mm.
There were guys who didn't have proper PPE.
Mm.
You know? To protect themselves.
Mm.
The PPE that they brought was substandard. Guys started catching COVID. Doctors started dying left, right, and center.
Mm.
ICU zote zimejaa. Then there was also the other thing COVID taught us was at that time when it started, insurance was not covering. Not your private insurance, not NHIF.
Mm.
So now Ebola ikikam na iletwe na ikuje and it spreads, infect a Kenyan person. Is SHA going to cover it? We still don't know.
Mm.
We still haven't had those. And those are relevant questions to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Private insurance. Because insurance hide behind, well, it's the law, it's the fine print.
Mm.
Was usually during outbreaks, wanasemanga, they don't cover. Unless it's a special. Now, COVID, it took a lot of, lobbying. Until now, insurance is even, ukichukua private insurance, they'll tell you COVID-19 related covered.
Mm.
And it's because now we know to have vaccines, we know how to manage COVID kidogo.
Yeah.
So those are some of the questions that Kenyans are asking.
Mm.
And what shocks me is that ile kiburi gava imetoka nayo. Unajua like
we don't have to
public participate, which is true. Unajua the thing is what he's saying is fact in the Health Act and stuff. That is true, especially in outbreaks.
Mm.
But there is a way you need to communicate to your citizens.
Mm.
See, this thing, I can be the expert all I want, but if I don't build your trust, then my message will just fall on deaf ears and it doesn't reach people. You need to start being transparent. This deal between the US and Paka Leo, we don't know.
Yeah. Mm.
We don't know the exact details about it. So it's quite unfortunate. I always believe our leadership is very poor in communication.
Mm.
Very poor. And that's where the problem starts. And then when you question them, instead of them responding in an emotionally intelligent way, they start telling you,
kiburi.
Hey, who do you think you are? Mm. Hey, are you the expert? We are the ones telling you, msitufundishe kazi yetu.
Yeah. Mm. And that's the worst part about this, because like, yes, if you were an actual expert, I will probably have more faith in how you're handling it. But we know how African governments are, where like people are in control of ministries that they're not experts in.
Yeah.
It's just like, unacheki, umse, ajui chochote kuhusu hiyo area, but for favoritism na orezo na juana na nini mse yuko hapo. So when you're telling people you're not an expert, nigga, even you are not an expert.
Yeah. Actually, the only person has been really technical in answering all the questions is the PS, Dr. Oluga. The rest of the guys, the CS, the other PS of CG Health, those guys are not medics by background. So you can hear, it's always the information they're given from the experts who work around them, because you have to be surrounded with the experts who are doctors. But it gets to a point where even them, you can tell they don't have the technical know-how of what's going on. But of course, the good thing is that all of them have advisors. All the CS is just, you know, they're the microphone. But the real work happens with who is advising them, the experts who are behind this.
Then learn how to talk with the microphone.
Eko nene, soon mekoni kibonga na waso wako US, najua? Na waso wangu wako US, jo. Kama badu uja join LEMFI, jo. Nangoja nini? Make sure metumia promo code Eko nene. But saizi, wacha nibonga na waso wako Europe, na pia nibonga na waso wako Brito. Usisahau kuwa, join LEMFI, natumia promo code ekonene so that on your first transaction ya 100 euros utabaki umepata 10 euros cashback. Na kama uko Britain, on your first transaction ya 100 pounds utabaki umepata 10 pounds cashback. So unangoja nini? Baki umechangamka. Na usahau kuwa bado ukiwa hizo ma area za majuu unabaki umepay your bills hapa Kenya. Tuseme unataka kulipia madhako internet ama unataka kumlipia stima, unaweza tumia paybill haraka haraka. Mother anaweza kupigia jua kuambia yuko kwa line jo. Anataka till yani umwambie tu tuma till number, alafu unaingia kwa LEMFI, unabaki umechangamka haraka haraka. So, baki umechangamka, fika LEMFI, tumia promo code ekonene. Jia nini? LEMFI ni international payments for everyone.
Yeah, and talking about and also consultants, you know, who can really bring in the technical expertise.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before we wrap up on the frontline workers, because the last time we had a contingent of Kenyans going there, and I remember there was a lot of media activity around it. They went, they worked, even when they came back, because many thought they wouldn't be able to come back, going by the nature of Ebola. Are we sending our medical
personnel there?
That's one question. And then the second would be, the way Americans fight their wars, they always take the war to where it is. Like right now they're in, where? In? Iran. They always take the fight
where it is.
Yeah, so, but this time around, instead of taking the fight to Congo, they're bringing the fight here, transferring the fight to Kenya. My question would be, why couldn't they set up that center in Congo, then take volunteer health practitioners from all over the world? We understand what they are doing there, but it's their responsibility as a superpower to do that. When you're the richest guy in the room, you pay the bills. You know, so America being the superpower, we need them to be there because they have the top-notch scientists, doctors, and all that. They're doing well. But actually, they have set up the center in Congo and then set up, probably now through goodwill, set up another center in Kenya as a secondary one. So anyone who's contracts Ebola there, including other professionals from any other country, they're treated there. And then they're given a buffer, that incubation period or something, or a recovery period. Once you're declared completely healed, then you're brought to Kenya, where now you can relax, enjoy our sunshine, and all that, and then now you can go back to your country. Why couldn't they just? Because it's simple.
Yeah.
Because these questions.
I like the way you've broken that. You've broken it down perfectly. So for me, it's like you don't even need to be an expert. The way you've explained it just makes perfect logical sense that, because that's what happens in other places. You quarantine from the place you get the infection. If it was in Uganda, you are quarantined there until it's finished. If you've flown from China and you've come to Kenya and you get COVID or you get malaria or you get yellow fever, it has to be treated here, and then once you're finished, you can go back. Or unless the country insists, and even to Changi on top of that, if you don't want to be treated there or you don't have the access, why not be treated in the US, which has the best facilities, best healthcare? They have those facilities, proper. You don't have to build them up from scratch. But the problem is, there is poor leadership. We are facing poor leadership also up there.
Yeah.
Because the people who are advising them, does it make sense? When you say that you will not allow any American citizen or you will not allow Ebola to enter America, you as a foreign policy person, you can talk that way. But from a global health policy, it doesn't work like that. Ebola doesn't need a passport or visa or you contain it and say...
Exactly.
It just needs to infect somebody and they'll come and they'll bring it there. That's not how foreign policy... You are not allowing Americans with Ebola. It can still pass through. If you don't properly do the thing in the beginning, the proper screening, the proper surveillance, the proper confirmatory testing, or you do those 21-day quarantines and see what happens after that. So we definitely have a problem. I agree with you 100%. And that is what the scientists around are saying. I haven't seen the WHO come out loudly to say, no, that shouldn't happen. Because again, remember, US pulled out of the WHO last year.
Yeah.
So PIA, they realize they can't come too strong because we also need that money from the US in Congo, which they have donated. So they're also doing something. It's not just Kenya receiving funds.
Mm-hmm.
The Congo is also receiving funds. But again, poor leadership. If these guys didn't maintain USAID, maintained the CDC programs, did not fire people, prioritize healthcare, because they're like, why are we funding you people to fight HIV? They're not seeing they're thinking like, we're trying to save US taxpayer money going here, but it's going there so that Ebola doesn't come out, so that ikuje affect nyinyi wa America. So it's part of them protecting us. But again, the problem is we are over reliant on that aid. So it could have been prevented, but hiyo pesa sasa imerudi. You know, and of course there are some people who will capitalize on that. It's now unfortunate because it wasn't just aid that went. There was members of staff who were there, who are positioned, and those people have been pulled out. So now, definitely, through AU, through the Africa CDC, I mean, there's experts. We have experts in Kenya. You go there, and it's usually a multiple partnership, stakeholder partnership. So you'll find the Ministry of Health of Kenya, Ministry of Health Uganda, DRC, in partnership, maybe now the WHO, the CDC, USAID, these programs now, because sisi hatuna hiyo doko kwenda kupeleka daktari huko kutreat mtu DRC. But through the stakeholders and the donors and the funders, then you unapata job, you go and work. And there are people who've been working there. And it's the same reason why the PS had mentioned that right now we have people being quarantined for Ebola in Kenya because of, you know, the nature of business. People have nature of business in DRC, which is all true. But not using that now to say it, oh, now we are ready because we can quarantine 37 people. They have trained around 2,000 people. So what I would like to see from a public health standpoint is, you remember there's a time our president was very proud to say, I've hired 100,000 doctors. Those are what you call community health workers. Those are the guys who are on the ground. Those are the guys who, their basic training is usually things like malaria, danger signs in pregnancy, when a mother is having a complicated labor, if you come a pneumonia, diarrhea diseases, and they usually have like what you call a kit. So itakuwa na dawa ya malaria, testing for malaria, dawa ya like diarrhea for rehydration so that the kids, but they are trained with these easy basic diseases, easy malaria,
starter pack.
Making sure you go for immunization. They are trained about now telling people about HIV, condomize, abstain, So if you want to train people so that Ebola doesn't come, those are the numbers we need to hear, that we have trained 100,000 community healthcare workers through our programs on the signs of Ebola, what makes a suspected case. So because unaona hiyo hizo fluids pia, if somebody has Ebola alafu aende azikwe, all these things of touching the body, cleaning the body, washing the body, which is our African traditions, we do that, and you'll find that is the practice, especially around Uganda, Busia, Western. Hizo practices, the Nilots, it's very cultural, and it's the same. They have that thing. Na ile ya mwili inalala fast, you one night in, I don't know, kwa boma, and then now you go and unaenda unazika. So those are the things that the community healthcare workers, they have more reach, wando wako kwa grao, wando they can reach the very rural areas. They're usually the first point, what you call preventative healthcare. And that is part of now the universal health coverage thing we are trying to create. So we haven't heard about that. We've heard they've trained 2,000 healthcare workers, but which workers are these? What's the dynamics? We have 55 million Kenyans. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's bad that it's only 2,000, but let's increase the capacity so that mm-hmm. you can tell me you're prepared, because the first contact is your community healthcare workers. Then it's the next tier of healthcare, which is now your level one. You'll find nurses, you'll find clinical officers, you find now the doctors, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm, it's very true, because also the awareness through civic education about it, especially in the rural areas, it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. But my worry is like the way it has taken a political switch. If you listen to Ruto in essay, like answering a journalist, you listen to Rubio, and you listen to the CS, they have not denied, like, you know, accepting patients. And that is what is worrying me.
Yeah.
So I think where we are now is just bracing for impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
that
actually hoping, akuna muamerika shikio kitu, ndo asikuje. Let's hope at least no American. Because we know for sure they are not going to bring somebody from the DRC.
Mm.
They're not going to bring somebody from Uganda.
Yes. The same way they deal with, you know, terror-stricken countries. Eh? They send planes. Mm. They send Black Hawks to evacuate them.
Mm.
Like the same way they should just evacuate the guys who are showing symptoms of such things.
I think also, me also have another fear that I don't know if you guys have, it's not for the doctors to do this, but right now, with all the knowledge we have of what Ebola is you tell me like there's a Kenyan, like let's say there's a Kenyan here who has the symptoms, right? How do you handle that person? Because I know there's going to come kuna ile arrogance ya sisi wa Kenya, like you tell me I have it, but sasa nataka nataka kukimbia because I don't want to be
stigma,
nataka kukimbia. So how are you guys going to handle it? Because it borderlines like what do you call it, like msiana fa kuarestiwa sasa, like because we know you have it, you can infect other people, but pia unasema
hutaki.
Ni ngumu, si ndio?
Ni ngumu, because like I said, the other challenge is the same symptoms of malaria.
Mm.
All the symptoms that you can get in malaria is the same symptoms you can get in Ebola. All the symptoms you can get in dengue fever is the same symptoms you can get in Ebola. Because even dengue fever is like a hemorrhagic fever as well.
Mm.
So, like, if you look at the symptoms, they're so vague. And that's the challenge with, I tell guys about medicine. It's like, even you could say COVID, because in COVID you can vomit, you can still have fever, you can have joint aches.
Mm.
Those are all symptoms of Ebola. Mm. It's only that you'll see how the disease progresses that you'll come now to realize that, okay, it's this and this and this.
Yeah.
So stigma, the only way to address stigma, again, is to create the right awareness.
Mm.
So that's where advocacy comes in place, advocacy and communication. But you can see right now, instead of using this opportunity of all these questions being asked to now educate people and to tell them, like, this is how it spread through bodily fluids.
Mm.
If somebody has these symptoms, find out, have they come into contact with somebody in Uganda, in DRC, where we have reported cases? Have they gone to visit a relative huko and they've come back and now they have malaria-like symptoms? Maybe walikunywa dawa malaria na walikuwa nasikia malaria and then wakanunua kwa chemist and they didn't improve and they're still feeling sick. So those are the things now to suspect. And once you give people information, the stigma, once you're informed with the right information, stigma reduces. But at the same time, no matter what we say as experts, if the people of your country have lost trust in you as a government, it becomes very, very hard to contain outbreaks. Because we'll tell you something, we say, pana, hizi stories ajaba, wameanza tena, wamelipwa, which you see some of those things are true, but it's because you've already lost trust, you're already coming out really, you know, thumping on your chest. When you have to be, yes, you don't have to ask for public participation, but you can listen to what people are asking and respond and say, okay, guys, we hear you. But this is the unajua hata ange explain vile nime explain sema maze pesa ambazo zilikuwa zinakuja kutibua tu HIV ilikuwa inakuja hivi. These guys pulled out. That's why we've taken this. We understand maybe it's a risk, but we are going to make extra screening in to make sure that we contain it so that we don't put Kenyans at risk. We know what we're doing, but it's because we have this deficit. We don't want to tax Kenyans more. No, that's how I would have come out. And then you would have said, okay, you'd listen to it, maybe you don't like it, but utaelewa where I'm coming from. Unakuwa transparent, unasema, guys, hii ndo budget. Hii ndo tumeraise this year. Hapa kwa health, we need this to make sure this Ebola doesn't come. And we have this deficit or this gap in our budget. We need to take this certain risk, but we are going to ensure that we try our level best. Not, of course, they can't give you 100% guarantee, but we try our level best. And in the case that a Kenyan does, we will make sure that they get that same treatment, the best treatment, and we can even take them to the states as part of our bilateral agreement. If things get very bad and they need, some kind of expertise or whatever. So that now you're like, okay, you are listening. See, tukusema, shut up, we know what we're doing.
And you know what I'll do also on top of that? You see, you've talked about training CHFs, eh?
Yeah, community healthcare workers.
What I'll do extra is, apart from the 2,000 that have been trained, where is this center going to be situated? In Nanyuki? Because those people now, I wonder what are fast at risk in case of anything. Because up at your center, as much as it's a military space, lazima kutakuwa the military nyewe, so wanatoka wana engage na watu wako inje. So probably hata kama ni transmission, itakuwa around the community. Na kwa community tunajua, kama kitu inakuja and they don't understand it, there is room for what? There is room for speculation, room for guesswork, room for assumptions and all that. Mta atakohoa kidogo, Ebola. Kidogo mtu ana nose bleed ni nini? Ebola. Panic will set in. Like the similar panic ime set in just with the center tu kukua hapo. I would have taken members of that community.
Exactly.
Even 2,000 of them.
Exactly.
And then adequately train them, equip them, and made them ready for the next
probably one. Define nini?
Yeah.
You have basically defined the role of a community healthcare worker.
Yeah.
The community healthcare workers are not medics.
Yeah.
So they are not, they don't go to school like the way nurses, the way clinical officers, the way thingy. And the way they allocate clinical, community healthcare workers or CHWs is, they go for, a baraza meeting is held.
Yeah.
There has to be either a member of the community, like an elder or someone. They all sit down in that community. Then they select the people that they nominate, people who will now become community healthcare workers. So just like that, they sit in the community. And then now the community healthcare workers, because now they kind of have been co-signed by now the elders in that community, my chief, manini, when now they even do, community healthcare workers also now do this advocacy.
Yeah.
So they go, they sit down and they tell you HIV is like this. They'll teach people about condoms, abstaining. They'll tell people about ARVs and where you can get treatment, all those things. So the same way, when you train a community healthcare workers, that's why I'm saying those 100,000 guys need to be trained.
Yeah.
Because a community healthcare worker, one community healthcare worker manages multiple households to a population of 5,000 people. So 100,000 times 5,000, if you've impacted. And they've sat down with those households, have barazas, explain to them about Ebola so that we don't have that stigmatization.
Yeah. Mm.
But again, it's the PR and CSR that the government is lacking in things like this. If in reality, because me, I'm also najaribu kucheza devil's advocate because I know hakuna pesa. Hakuna pesa. And we need money for us to be able to be whatever. Able to,
yeah.
But we can't also just take money to evil and then munatuacha in the dark at sisi now we are going to pay the price. You have to give us, in fact, at your area, your like kipe, they need to say, okay, I know we've been having challenges with SHA, nini. This mkienda kwa clinic, nini, healthcare, hakuna mtu atasumbuliwa, nini. You know, just to make you have to
and then on top of that, because kuna pesa inakuja, ile community, train them.
Exactly.
And then for the next 1 year, to keep monitor, our tu waikwe kwa na ka stipend. Kidogo tu, our community health care workers, ndiyo every day they're going around,
so one of the things,
to people, because that money is coming in. I think they can spare kidogo
for
that community. To
add, yes.
Yeah, and then as on top of allowance. That, as that is being done, the same people who are trained with information, equipped, armed with the relevant information to allay any disinformation and misinformation, such that huyu wona muona, unaona huyu ni Ian, huyu yuko in charge ya hii area, anaishi hapa, ikikuja yeye atakuwa at risk, but yenda anakuambia, anakupatia certain details. And also for the government to do a lot of pre, not after, to do issues management, not crisis management. Issues ni tunangoja, na vile me explain to tuko na short hapa, hawa natuletea, hii tuneka kwa kikapu ya national government, saidie HIV hapa, malaria hapa, matane.
That's what unavile ume think.
Yeah.
That is preventive healthcare, PHC. And what you have defined, because how I know this so well is because this was part of my thesis. It was about the impact of child health in community healthcare workers. So before, and that's why there was this big thing, PR, that President Ruto did of, he didn't call them community healthcare workers. Mm. Aliitwa madaktari. I've hired, nimeajiri, unajua when you talk, unajua everyone in our white coat ni daktari. 100,000 doctors. So it looks like, hey, this is something. But this was a bill that was being passed and it went through. Before they used to be called community health volunteers. So they used to be, ni kama ma volunteer too. And they never used to get paid, like a salary, or they never used to have benefits. And that used to impact, because unapata sasa ni mtu lazima atumie pesa yake kupandisha mama boda boda ndo ampeleke hosi, because this is in the rural setting. So what they did studies and said these people need to be paid so that they have some sense of motivation after their training, because they are actually doing work. They are doing preventative healthcare to reduce the burden on the big hospitals, Kenyatta and the likes. So now it became, now they changed and they were called community healthcare workers. So once they got the word worker, it means this person is on a salary, this person has benefits, and this person, as long as you have that pay slip, it means utter for you, you can go to a bank, you can get a loan, you have access to financing to better themselves, to have that. But they're still having challenges, because now it's that money is channeled through the county level, not through the national. Because community health workers fall under the counties. Now the health counties, they don't fall under the docket of national. But there is budget from Treasury that goes towards to counties that is allocated to community healthcare workers. So everything you've defined is part of primary healthcare, universal healthcare coverage, and it's there. Now we have those... It's going on like that. So at least wamekuwa empowered, and they work in the barazas, they work in communities. And that's why I was emphasizing, train those guys. Don't tell me you've trained 2,000 people. Those are not enough. The community healthcare workers are 100,000.
Yeah.
And the good thing is we already have that infrastructure, because remember, they receive basic training. Some of it is done on ground. Others are doing it online, you know, online learning, nini. And then you sit down and you do like a test and exam to know kama this one is competent or not. So those platforms are there. They just need to make sure that they train these guys.
Okay. So yes, another pandemic to kitoka hii story.
Ngoja kwanza kabla tutoki pandemic. Number one, I'd like to commend healthcare workers. You know, they're
shukran, bro.
Yeah, there are things that I always take very seriously. Security, health, education, agriculture, and technology. So tano tukizishikilia.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but apa kwa health, these guys are frontline workers. Unajua, ikushike wewe, a doctor, unatibu probably 1,000 people. All of them are looking at you. Nurses, the same thing. Uyo moja kifariki, before you train a doctor, before you train a nurse, it takes a lot of years, so many years. So to me, I always feel sad whenever nona doctors, nurses, other medical practitioners wakienda strike, alafu wanapigwa na tear gas. When they demonstrate, wanapigwa na tear gas. Zingine juu ya salaries and all that, or even better working conditions. So I think we should also improve on that and take these professionals very seriously, and with the level that inatakikana. But a mistake we made with the constitution, I think it's in the constitution, ni kutoa healthcare from national yeah. government kuiweka kwa
county,
kuiweka kwa county. Tungefu hiyo mistake
I can also put it on the doctors because doctors are not being more proactive in legislation, in policy. The thing is, it was kind of being discussed and there was no expert opinion from us doctors, because doctors also tuko na hii, we like to, we just stick our heads in our sand in our profession and believe that hizi vitu hazizi, sisi hatuingii mambo ya siasa and do what. And that's because public participation, doctors' input was not given, and it was not given correctly. So the political agenda went through, and then the doctors' public participation wasn't strong enough, because that's a big challenge. Because if in the constitution it says you have the right to the highest, most attainable healthcare, and Murang'a County is doing the best for their citizens and they are getting good healthcare, they go there, they get treated, and maybe people in Nairobi County, the governor is not doing his job or whatever, just an example, I'm not saying he's doing that, but he's not doing his job, you're not getting the right healthcare, it means there is inequity. That one in Murang'a, that one in Nairobi is they are all Kenyans,
yeah.
they need to get the highest attainable,
yeah.
unani get, so it now healthcare is based on how your governor performs and how your county performs, which is just on that basis you can see how the logic of that story of devolving healthcare didn't make sense. Because it's the same reason education was not devolved.
Yeah.
Because utaanza kusikia all the graduates are coming from Nairobi County. Jo hapo ndo kuna mashule na nini and nini and all the resources and whatever, and then it becomes inequity. It means that if you don't go to study in Nairobi, the chances of you graduating or passing and going to university hakuna. So we didn't come out strong back in those days. Okay, me bado sikuwa daktari, but our seniors. And that's why it's very important now for more doctors to, you know, get into these spaces, roles of MP. Some of the people who are really back, giving back expert is MP Nyikal, who is also a pediatrician. He's the one who's called them out and said, listen, this doesn't happen in epidemiology, in outbreaks and things. The quarantine is there in that place that person is. And this is, that was very refreshing to hear. You see now an expert instead of an MP ambaye amepewa hiyo opinion and doesn't know about it. So we need more voices in things like no, parliament. We need to participate.
Na hiyo comparison yako between Murang'a and Nairobi. I know you try to pull yourself away from it, but it's right on brand.
Yeah.
You are not doing nothing, Mr. Governor.
Amefilizo barabara kiku.
Yeah. Uyo governor afanyi chochote. I know he's a nice guy. But it's right on brand.
Unaona amesema MP ule amerezio issue ni Dr. Nyikale. So ukiangalia pia MP majority au MP wako pale bro.
Yeah.
Kuna MP wana hiyo capacity hata ya kushikanisha nini
inaendelea.
Hawa nangoja tu vote yes.
Vote,
yes. Sasa, vote no.
Juu kama hawajui au siasa atakuja waambia nini, na because they don't know watasema okay sawa tunaelewa. But when somebody has that knowledge atasema it doesn't work like this.
Yeah,
you guys are being swayed. So if we have more voices, experts, like
very true.
Because we have a lot of lawyers at least in those whatever. You have
but also those lawyers who are there. I want to ni ma wash ndo tumejaza parliament. Me I always have an issue with parliament. Tumejaza ma wash. Tumejaza watu gani tena hien. In fact, because the wash is a big industry. So kienduko kuna different.
Some are criminals.
Others are aki yes. Parliament.
Some have cases. You know, if you have
people
a case
with zero emotional intelligence.
Yes.
People are just looking at what they're gaining at that particular moment. Watu wana foresight. Mtana ngoja, next election, minda sema ni kui term, ama term ingine.
Mtu amekwambia me spend 100 million on campaign.
Exactly, on campaign. Mtata kuja tuonyeshe yuko na cash. At ni kui term, ama term, then anajua tapigiwa kura, unaona. So
the
parliament is so unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's a huge, the up on domina semaga, that's where we have a huge problem. Huge disappointment.
Those are supposed to be our voices. And you see, unfortunately, they are if it needs to be passed, they are for hire. We've seen it.
Yeah.
Like there's evidence there, like sijui, whether you want to hide it in sijui allocation of sijui moto, increasing your allocation for vehicles, sijui what. Unajua, it's those things, like in short, what are you saying? You're bribing. you know, and you're telling us, oh, we've passed something for members what to increase na this type. I'm like, in short, even don't tafanya, even don't itaonga, and it's basically, see, that's how now finance believe on to libebwa to.
Yeah.